Hi, this is Drew, and thanks for listening to our podcast. Hopefully, you've been enjoying our show for a while now, but if you're a brand new listener, then the next 50 seconds are not for you, so just go ahead and fast forward a bit. I just wanted to ask our longtime listeners to consider becoming patrons of The Drew Marshall Show, because by throwing us just a few bucks each month, you'll be helping what many tell us is the most brutally authentic spiritual show they've ever heard stay on the air. Look, as loyal podcast listeners, you've been getting the same programming our radio listeners have been hearing live Saturdays 1 to 5 for the last 16 years. Except you get to hear everything commercial-free, you smart consumer, you. Well, because of a brand new arrangement with our studio, our expenses have now gone through the roof. And to be brutally honest, we could use the help to cover those costs. So just before you go to bed tonight, maybe you could stop by our website and click on the giant click here to become a patron sign. And if a whole bunch of you were able to scrounge up like $4 per month, then individually your $4 would have just made a massive difference in helping us cover what it costs to bring you the Drew Marshall Show. Okay, that's it. Sorry to bug you. Now on with the show. I hope you have a good sleep tonight after you become a patron.
But I can't help falling in love with you.
All right, folks. Well, look, as you know, it's our St. Patrick's Day special. And we searched high and low for somebody special to have on our St. Patrick's Day special. I don't know if I can say the word special anymore. And we found Wee Daniel. I was speaking to somebody over in Northern Ireland, and they said, you've got to get Wee Daniel on the show. And I said, Wee Daniel? Who the heck is that? And they said, Daniel O'Donnell. I said, oh, Daniel O'Donnell. Okay, everyone knows that. So we found him. We searched all over the world, and we found him in Singapore, hiding from TMZ, from the press. DanielO'Donnell.org is the website, and he's going to be visiting Canada very soon. He'll be hitting up Regina, Calgary, Edmonton, Winnipeg, Thunder Bay, Ottawa, Kitchener, Windsor, all of this in May and June. So get out to see this fella, because you know him. You've heard his music. Daniel, very, very important question to sort of start off this interview. Like, you just had dinner recently. Did you have mince and tatties, or did you just have some crisps and chocolate and 7-Up? And maybe then did you hook up with a game of bridge somewhere?
No, I didn't do any of that. I just arrived in Singapore this evening from Colombo. We did a show in Sri Lanka last night in Colombo. And I flew to Singapore today. And so I'm just gathering myself in a hotel room at the minute. And I went out and I had some food in a Asian restaurant just across the road.
Yeah, that's one of your other favorites. Hey, you know what? I've done this research on you. And, you know, you come up with mundane facts like you like mince and tatties or you like Chinese or... And everybody who's interviewed you seems to go into your beginnings because you had these humble beginnings. So what I want to do is I want to save you the torture of going through that part of the interview again. And I'm going to summarize to our listeners what I found out about you just so you don't have to rattle on about it. You ready?
Good.
Okay.
I enjoy listening to this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll tell you if it's true when you finish.
Okay, good, good. All right, so I don't know how to pronounce this place, but apparently you grew up in Kincastlets, Northwest Ireland by the sea, in a small town. You lived in a house owned by your mother's cousin, which your grandmother probably lived in. No indoor toilet, no running water. Your father used to work in Scotland as a laborer. When you were 6, he died. He died of a heart attack at the age of 49 in August 1968. Your mother was married to him for 19 years. There was, I think, 5 kids. But they'd only spent 3 years together in total because he was away working so much. How did I do?
Very good.
Did I get anything wrong?
No, I don't think so. I think it's all fairly correct, yeah.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, on the button.
Okay, so singing in the choir, Catholic boy, you know, I'm a marshal, so I came from Scotland. They sent us over to Northern Ireland. You know us as Protestant planters. We were sent over to your neck of the woods to tick you guys off, I think, right?
Yeah. And you didn't do a very good job with that.
So singing in the choir, you know, in a small town, like I grew up in a small town and went to a Protestant church, and church was everything. It was everything. Every event and the bake sales and the charity things and like you had feast days, you had October devotion, benediction, Lent, First Fridays, May devotions. I mean, you were a church boy. True story?
Yeah, well, I grew up in a very, it's not a town at all, it's a little village just right, as you said, on the northwest coast of Ireland. in County Donegal. And yes, the church was very, I suppose, important in those days. We did a lot of things revolved around the church. Not the same now, I have to say. You know, it doesn't have the same influence, I think, on day-to-day living. But back then, you know, it was very, very instrumental in what went on. And, you know, there was lots going on associated with the church. I still think people have a good enough respect for the church. Maybe not to the same number of people attend church, you know. So there's a big shift in that way.
Okay, so, you know, back in the day, it was not an option not to go to Mass. So you did that. And then you started traveling and realized that you actually wanted to go to Mass. Whereas most people, not, you know, that's unfair of me to say that. Well, most people I've spoken to, so anecdotally, when they were forced to grow up going to church, they were forced to go to church. Then when they got to a certain age, they stopped. They didn't want a thing to do with it. But you kept going.
Yeah, well, you know, I realized that, I suppose, myself when I was traveling and I was searching out churches, because it really didn't matter then to anybody, only myself, whether I went or not. And I found that I got a comfort, a sense of belonging. I don't know, I can't exactly say why, other than I still go and I feel better for it. That's all I can tell you. And I liked the opportunity to go to church, and, you know, I continue to do that. I probably will continue to do it. I don't see anything that would stop me from going.
So obviously there must be an external pull, you know, if you believe there's a God, maybe this God is dragging you towards him.
Well, I suppose the thing about it is, for me, I think when I go to church, I know we're told that God is everywhere and he's all around, but every so often, you know, you can have friends, and if you don't visit them, you don't keep up a connection.
Yeah.
So I suppose that's the way I feel about it. Every so often, I think it's good to go and visit.
Sure, sure. Well, I mean, look, I experienced that for the first time. You know, growing up Protestant, I was never much into the buildings. But when I walked the Camino a few years ago, you know, 1,000 kilometers across a bit of France and Spain to the Atlantic, and stopped at all these cathedrals, boy, it certainly tugs at your soul, let me tell you.
Yeah, I've never done the Camino, but lots of people I know have done it, and it's quite something. It's quite a... I don't think you have to be religious to do the Camino, and I don't think you have to be religious to have an incredible experience in the Camino. I'm speaking to people who have done it, and it is quite an event to be a part of. Something maybe I'll do.
Okay, so listen, Cliff Richard, he's a pal. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Okay, now he's a big Jesus guy too. So do you guys get together and, you know, talk about God stuff?
No, we don't. We don't talk. No, when we meet, we sometimes, you know, it would get to there. But we don't talk about religion. I think it's understood that we both believe, and that's it.
You know,
we both a similar belief, you know.
Yeah. It can be a sensitive topic when I'm speaking with the Irish. You know, I had Sharon Corr on the show a few years ago, and you know, it's come up now and then as a bit of a sensitive. And of course, I had Sinead O'Connor on a number of years ago, and boy, that's a very sensitive topic for her, but not for you.
No. I suppose I've never been one. I've never denied it, and I've never. I'm not a preacher. You know, I don't go on stage to preach. You know, I think that music and politics and religion are very separate. So I go on to entertain, mm-hmm. and I certainly don't impose my views or you know, impress anybody with my views. I think it's something that everybody has to find their own way. And just because somebody doesn't attend a church or, you know, have the same belief as me, it doesn't mean that they're not as good as me. There's very, very good people who may never set their foot inside a church, but they're living a Christian life. Even people who don't profess to be Christian, you know, mm-hmm. you can live a very Christian life. So it's not for me or for you to judge, you know, what somebody should or shouldn't do. I think it's just by example we see it.
We're chatting with Daniel O'Donnell. His website, of course, is danieloDonnell.org. And Daniel, in doing the research on you, everybody, and it got a little sickening, to be honest, everybody said you're one of the nicest guys they've ever spoken with. And it was annoying after a certain point. A couple things I have to say about that. First of all, being one of the nicest guys. Maybe, number one, maybe that's why you haven't been cast a role on Coronation Street yet, because you're such a nice guy. Don't you have to be a bit more of a dirtbag to be on Coronation Street?
Well, you never know. Maybe I'll get on there one day.
Okay, all right. Second thing is, there's a couple of people I've had on my show who have a similar reputation, and I just want to know, like, come on, you must have lost it at least once. You must get angry in the privacy of your own home.
Of course, if everybody gets angry at times, I probably just don't get angry as often.
Right.
I have a very calm way about me, I suppose, and it suits me. I do it for me. I don't do it to be acceptable to other people. It just suits me better to be calm and have not much frustration about me.
Do you think your faith plays any role in you being a nice guy, or would you be a nice guy whether you were a Catholic or not?
Well, that's very hard to say, because, I mean, it's all part of me.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
It's a bit difficult to say, if I wasn't this, I would be like that. You know, you are what you are, and you know, how you live is how you live, and that's... I just think that it's easier to be... not to have much... upset, and, you know, just the easy way is the best way.
Yeah. Boy, you remind me of my dad, something fierce. He's a funeral director, and as a funeral director, you can imagine that these guys would be pretty laid back. And my dad is so laid back. You could throw a hand grenade under his chair, and he'd say, oh, look, there's a hand grenade.
Yeah, well, I'm the kind, how I describe myself, if I drop, say I drop a glass on the floor, or break something, I just pick it up. Some people dance around for 5 minutes and then they still have to pick it up.
What's wrong with that? Come on.
Easier to just, oh yeah, okay, I'll have to fix that up now and tidy it up and off you go to the next thing.
Yeah. So listen, while we're chatting here, I'm just realizing that, you know, we're not in Ireland. There might be a few Canadians who may not know who you are. And so let's say you're sitting on a plane and you sit down beside some Canadian and you get chatting away, and they say the proverbial, you know, what do you do question. How do you explain yourself to somebody concisely? You know, because I've read your bios, and buddy, your bios go on forever. You've been at this a while. You've won a million awards and sold a million out. I don't know, whatever the numbers are. How do you explain to some schmuck on the plane beside you who you are?
Well, I don't explain very much, really. I just, if they ask me what I do, I just say, you know, that I sing and I do shows, and I don't elaborate on what I do, really. I just say the bare minimum.
Yeah.
About what I do.
Yeah.
I'd be very conversational, but I wouldn't be. I just think if somebody wants to find out, then they can, and if they don't, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I'm not one to, you know, to blow it all up, you know.
Many people have said to you, you're sort of grounded. It's like you, you're still aware of those days where you used to sell your records for £1.50, even on a bus.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I think that you never really lose sight of where you came from or how you started. And I'm always aware. And I think I'm always aware when I see younger people now. And I know it's a very different time, you know, to start in the music business, but I try to encourage people as much as I can. you know, when I see somebody starting out like I did, just to give them encouragement, and if I think they did something good, try to contact them to tell them. And it's tough when you're starting out.
Now, forgive me, this is my ignorance. I'm not even going to pretend I know everything about your career. I just know that everybody knows you except me, apparently. So, are you a bigger deal than your sister Margot? And when did that happen, and how does she feel about it? And does she ever get on your Wikipedia page and try to put in, you know, lies and just tear you down a notch? Eh? Cheeky girl that she is.
I suppose we were in different times career-wise, even though there's only 10 years between us. Margaret had her career in the late 60s, 70s, and 80s. And really, I suppose at the time, she did as much or more than you could ever imagine somebody could do. I came later, and the opportunities maybe were different for me. So it gave me another avenue. So, yeah, I mean, it's just different careers at different times, but equally successful.
Let me ask you a typical sort of interview question now. Let's do the desert island one. Those are always fun. If you were to be stuck in a desert island with one person, you'd have to choose between Charlie Pride or Loretta Lynn.
Oh, my God.
I know.
That's very, very bad. Loretta's my favorite of all time, and Charlie's a close second, and Cliff is there too. So I would have to choose Loretta for my music, I suppose. But I love Charlie. I just love him.
You and the missus have quite a good love story, especially the proposal. You had everybody crying. What was it, Christmas Eve or something like that? Magella, tell us about... I'm a sucker for love stories, so go for it.
Well, we were at home at Christmas, and on Christmas Day, I said to her, you should call your mother. Mother and her father lived in Tenerife in the Canary Islands, and she picked the phone up in the kitchen, and I said, oh, why didn't you go to the bedroom? It's a bit quieter there. And so she proceeded to do that, and then I went in and stuck on a song and said, took the phone, and I said to her mother, I says, Marion, I have some business to attend to here. I says, I need to propose to your daughter, so off I went.
Well played.
Then I all cried, as you can imagine.
Sure, good for you. Growing up without a dad for, you know, most of your life, I think you were six when he died, I have the impression that people try to maybe make more of a deal out of that than maybe should be. But do you think it played a pretty big role in shaping who you are, growing up fatherless?
Well, you know, it's very hard to say, would you be different, or would I be different if my father was alive for a good part of my life, or would I be the same? It's really hard to say.
Yeah, that's not what I'm asking. What I'm asking is, how do you think that shaped you?
Not having a father.
Yeah, not having a father. How do you think it shaped you?
I really don't know that. I don't know how it shaped me, other than I suppose my mother was very influential. But I don't know that I'd be any different. I kind of think when I hear about my father that I'm quite like him.
Interesting.
So, you know, even though he wasn't there, it seems like I'm like him in ways, not maybe all ways, but some ways. So it's very hard to say how it shaped me. I suppose I am as I am now. And,
sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay, so what's it like being a grandfather? Because that just happened to me over the last couple of years.
Ever. Ever. That is just the top of the tree as far as experiences in life is concerned. And, or, you know, just we have two. Olivia is the little girl, and she'll be four coming in August. And Archie, little boy, he was a year in January. So they're just, they bring us so much joy. And they don't care what you are, what you do, what you have. It's just unconditional.
Yeah, it's quite a, you nailed it on the head. You know, you experience unconditional love with your own kids, And then they grow older and they start to hate your guts. And so you wonder about that. And you sort of lose grasp of unconditional love. You know, at the start of a marriage, you think it's unconditional love, but then later it gets a bit rougher, a bit more normal, I would say. But when it comes to grandkids, boy, I don't know if it ever changes. They unconditionally love you forever, unless you're a complete ratbag to them, or, you know, that sort of thing.
I know. Yeah, well, I would like to think that they will forever, yes.
Yeah.
And just that I live a long time to see them, you know, do different things and achieve different things and, you know, just have experience in their life and see as much as I can of what happens.
Daniel O'Donnell is chatting with us for our St. Patrick's Day special, danieloDonnell.org. He's heading up to Canada, Regina, Calgary, Edmonton, Winnipeg, Thunder Bay, Ottawa, Kitchener, Windsor, and doing all that somewhat near the end of May, beginning of June. So, Daniel, if we've got listeners who may have not been to one of your shows, what are they going to get? They're going to lay down the cash. What are they going to get?
Well, it's a mix of country, no, not modern country, more traditional country, some Irish ballads, a few Irish ballads, a bit of inspirational music, and even a wee bit of maybe 50s and 60s in there too. And yeah, a mix of all that. And looking for, we've never been to Thunder Bay, and we've never been to Windsor.
Yeah.
So that's the two new places on this trip. We've been to all the others and have enjoyed them immensely whenever we visit. So looking forward to another trip around some of Canada, not all of Canada.
As far as St. Patrick's Day is concerned, what do the Irish actually think of St. Patrick's Day? Do they sort of roll their eyes and go, this is a holiday that the Yanks celebrate more than we do? Or do you guys get into it just as much, even more?
Well, we have a celebration, but it's different to what would be celebrated outside Ireland. But we certainly would, a lot of people would go to Mass, even people who might not go to Mass ordinarily. And I'm talking from a Catholic point of view.
Cause sure, sure.
Obviously, the Protestants celebrate too St. Patrick's Day. I mean, at our church, the local fife and drum bands would be out playing around the church. Then we would normally have a parade in Dunloe, which is our nearest town. And it's just a day of celebration. That's how it is. Maybe not as green as it is outside Ireland, because we are green without putting green on, you know. if I'm away somewhere, you know, doing shows, people think you should be wearing green jackets. But when I open my mouth, I am Irish, so...
Yeah.
I don't need to outwardly present green when it's coming from inside.
Yeah. How do you explain the difference to those people out there that think Scottish, Irish, they're all the same?
Well, they're very similar. I will say that. The Scottish, especially the Scottish and the Irish, are very similar. But there are differences. I mean, Ireland is Ireland and Scotland's another country. And England's a different, and Wales. But we're all... You know, we are all in the same corner of the world. But I think we have more similarities and more connection with the Scottish. And especially where I come from in Donegal, a lot of our people, well, my father worked most of his life in Scotland. I had three uncles and two aunts that moved and lived in Scotland all their lives and their families. So I have... Most of my first cousins were born in Scotland.
Hmm. Do you, you know, as far as the celebrity imports, or I guess exports, as far as big famous Irish celebrities go, who do you rank up there as far as, oh, our country's proud about, you know, this person or that? Like, Liam Neeson would be, he's got to be up there on the list, would he not?
Yes, Liam Neeson, U2 are up there. Riverdance is certainly, you know, a huge thing. And the Pierce Brosnan would be
right.
One of the people that... and then we have people like the late Seamus Heaney, who was a great poet. And for a small country, Ireland has somebody at all areas of it, be it ancestors, you know, down the line, you know, that their ancestors were Irish, or they are first generation, or they are Irish who have emigrated. It's amazing for such a small country that there's such an influence in the world. And, you know, being Irish, you generally get a smile when people realize you're Irish. It's quite amazing.
Well, you know, I was thinking about maybe some oddballs to throw in that category, like Mrs. Brown's Boys. What's that fella's name? Because that thing's taken off.
Brendan O'Carroll. It's amazing. It's so funny. Sometimes you just can't believe what he does or what she does. My mother watched it all the time, and I was in the house one night, and this talk show came on. It's the Late Late Show, not the American Late Late Show, but the Irish one. And Brendan was on, and I said to her, "Mom," I said, that's Mrs. Brown there." She says, "What?" I said, "That's Mrs. Brown." She never even dreamt that Mrs. Brown wasn't a woman.
No.
Just couldn't believe it.
That's funny.
And I don't even know if she believed me up till the day she died that was actually Mrs. Brown. My mother just, she laughed and laughed and laughed at Mrs. Brown's Boys, yeah.
Daniel, how was it? I mean, look, it's tough for anybody to lose a parent, no matter what the age is. It really is. It's a scenario that forms your life. Again, no matter when it happens, when you lose your parent, but when you lose your last parent, you know, and your mom. I mean, come on, it's your mom. So take us through that. When did that happen? And like, she'd be pretty old. She'd be in her 90s, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was. Yeah, she was almost 95 when she passed away. 2014. So that's 5 years this year.
Yeah.
And my wife has just walked into the room.
Uh-oh.
And I haven't seen her for 5 weeks. So you'll have to excuse me. And she came
easy.
From Melbourne, Australia. Our son was in Melbourne and living, and she went to visit him for a week. And we're here in Singapore. We're going on a cruise.
Oh, good.
On Saturday.
Good.
But anyway, listen, just in relation to that, you know, my mother was nearly 95. We were very blessed that she lived a great life with very good health. But, of course, you miss her, but I think you have to be mindful that of the great life she had, and that you're sad for yourself. Glad for her, because her health had deteriorated physically a little, maybe in the last 6 months of her life. But mentally, she was perfect. So that's just how I feel. We were very sad at the time for, you know, that she was gone. But mindful that we had her for a long time, and she had a great life. And she saw 7 great grandchildren born. And,
wow.
You know, you have to be aware of all these things. And almost 95.
Yeah. Yeah, what a celebration. Okay, look, I'm starting to feel awkward because your wife has arrived and you haven't seen each other for 5 weeks. So I'm going to just slip out the back door here. DanielO'Donnell.org is the website you want to go to, and you certainly want to catch his gigs in Regina, Calgary, Edmonton, Winnipeg, Thunder Bay, Ottawa, Kitchener, and Windsor. End of May, beginning of June, go to the website DanielO'Donnell.org and get your tickets. And Daniel, you're heading out on a cruise with your missus, is that right?
We are on Saturday. We're going on a cruise.
And you haven't seen each other for 5 weeks. I feel sorry for anybody that has a room right beside you guys.
Good for you.
All the best, Daniel. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Happy St. Patrick's Day to you and to everybody listening. I hope you have a great day. And certainly, if you're coming to one of the shows, we look forward to seeing you.
Brilliant. Thank you, sir.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Daniel O'Donnell. Daniel O'Donnell. Can you imagine that? Just at the end of the interview, his wife comes in. They haven't seen each other for 5 weeks.
And the last thing he wants to do is talk to you.
Yeah. I'm leaving. Bye-bye. I know when I'm the fifth wheel. Wait, is it third wheel or fifth wheel? No, fifth wheel's a truck.
Well, either one works. The odd number
one
wheels.
Is awkward. What a good guy. Daniel O'Donnell, world-renowned Irish recording artist. His website, again, is danieloDonnell.org. I know that Elizabeth Marshall was quite excited when we told her that Daniel O'Donnell will be...
Because she knows, because she's...